I want to talk to you about Moses, who was one of the babies that was going to be terminated, but the mother spared his life and didn't terminate him. After three months, they couldn't control his crying anymore. They couldn't hide him anymore. They didn't know what to do. They certainly didn't want to be punished by Pharaoh for defying him. So they built a little basket and they sent him down the Nile in the basket. If you're reading on in the book of Exodus, you see that the princess, Pharaoh's daughter, sees the baby, calls and grabs the baby out of the Nile, and then decides to pay Moses' mother to look after the baby for a period of time. And then from there, when he grows up a little bit, he's brought into Pharaoh's palace and he's raised predominantly as a prince. Many of you would have seen the movie The Prince of Egypt. And so he's raised predominantly as a prince. And I want to just paint this picture for you this morning, because I'm going to title this morning's message, Moses the Reluctant Deliverer. Moses the Reluctant Deliverer. Moses the one who didn't necessarily understand what God was calling him to do. Moses didn't necessarily understand all the ramifications that his ministry would have. And yet Moses is one of the most revered characters in the Old Testament. He's revered by the Jews. He's revered and quoted by Jesus. He's revered by the Muslims. He brought in the law of Moses. You might have heard that, which wasn't the law of Moses at all. It was the law of God. He instituted and implemented Jethro's principles of leadership, which is still taught, by the way, in Harvard Business School. Not that I've been, but I've heard it referenced enough times to believe it. He is one of the main characters of the Old Testament. He's referenced by Christ in the New Testament, and there's this man that I want to talk to you about this morning. But what I really want to talk to you about this morning is how God can look at a life, and he can look at things that have been lost. He can look at things that have been stolen. He can look at things that have deteriorated and maybe died, and he can breathe life into them. He can restore them. He can redeem them, and he can return them. In fact, if you wanted to title this morning's message another title, you would say, God, the Returner of Lost Things. And at the end of the day, we're going to talk about this, and then I'm going to set a stage for it, if you will. And then I'm going to invite you to step out of your chairs, to step out of your comfort zone, and to have a burning bush experience at the front here. I'm going to invite you to come forward and ask God to reveal himself to your heart. I'm going to ask him to come and talk to you about things that have been lost that are going to be returned. And I'm going to start my message this morning, as I have already, by showing you my iPad, which many of you would remember was lost on the bus in London. And I remember when I lost it, and I talked to the new bus driver by text message, and I talked to some people that I met and said, you know, look, when you get on the bus, can you please check it out? Can you find my iPad? And I got this message back. It said, your iPad's not there. And my daughter, Beck, looked at me and she goes, Dad, have you prayed? And you know, there's a difference between kind of wishful thinking and actually praying. And I think I'd done a lot of wishful thinking, you know, kind of like, God, I hope that comes back to me. But I paused and I actually prayed and I said, God, would you return that which was lost to me? Would you bring it back again? Father, would you help them find that which was lost, and would you let them send it back to me? And so we prayed that prayer and I sent them a text and said, this is where it is. This is where I was sitting. This is where I believe it will be. Sure enough, within 20 minutes, I get a photo of the lady holding my iPad going, we found your iPad. I was very excited because I didn't really want to experience the loss of the finances in trying to have to replace a new iPad. And you can go, oh yeah, but that was there. Let me give you another story about things that were lost that have been returned and found. When my son was growing up as a teenager, he borrowed one of those little Game Boy game cards from a friend of his. It was about $70 in value. Because he was a teenager with a teenage brain, he promptly lost the little $70 Game Boy game card. And so the mum of the boy was pretty upset. The boy was pretty upset. I was now very upset because I don't like people borrowing stuff and not giving it back. And so I'm thinking, I've got to pay $70 for a Game Boy game card that I didn't even want to have in the first place. And so, you know, I said to my son, have you looked for it? And he went, yes. I said, have you had a really good look? And he went, you ever been in a teenage boy's bedroom? Anyone ever wonder where all your spare socks go? They go into that. Pen lids and pens also go into there. There's like a special place inside teenage boys' bedroom where things go to disappear. So I said to my son, I said, mate, have you prayed? Have you actually looked for it? And of course, he said yes. I said, have you prayed? And he gave me that look that went, you know, the one Beck's giving me right now. No, I'm just kidding. You know that look that goes, oh, as if God can find it. And so I did this. I went, Father, would you show me where this is? Would you return that which is lost? And I walked into the bedroom, and I kid you not, I walked into the bedroom, and there sitting on the shelf was a Game Boy game card. I thought, my boy's an idiot. I've since changed my mind. I don't think that anymore, Sam. As much. But and you can think, oh yeah, but you know, that was always there. It's like, absolutely. Do you know, sometimes it's not like God and brings it there. Sometimes he just reveals what was already there. Sometimes when something's lost, it's actually not lost at all. You know, you have that stupid comment, have you looked for it? Yeah. And then they ask the next question, don't they? Have you looked everywhere? Well, if I'd looked everywhere, then I would have found it, because it has to be somewhere. It didn't disappear into the spirit realm, which is still a somewhere. Moving on. There are two stories. Let me give you another story. You want another story about lost things that are found? My daughter's fishing, Beck. This is a good story about you, Beck. This is one that doesn't make you look bad as normal. So my daughter's fishing up at Moore Park Beach, and she's casting the rod in for Malachi, my grandson and her nephew, and she's walked into the water, and then apparently, I wish she was up here to do this, but apparently something touched her foot. Oh! So she jumped backwards, and she ran backwards carrying the fishing rod. Something fell out of her pocket. And Malachi, very calmly, standing on the shore, goes, Beck, is that your phone? Just as Beck looks over to watch this glowing light sinking and going out before the wave comes in. So she's fishing at night on the beach, and her phone falls into the water. We spend 40 minutes as a family walking around trying to find this stinking phone. Nothing. And she prays, God, this is an expensive phone. It wasn't one of those Android Samsung things. It was an iPhone. That's how you alienate one third of the congregation. I would have said half, but that would have been generous. No, I'm just kidding. It wasn't one third. It's probably two people. Anyway, it's a joke. So she can't find this phone, and we prayed, and I don't know, you know, whether you've ever experienced Beck being cranky, but you know, pleasant wouldn't be one of the words you use to describe it. And so she was a little bit mortified, a little bit frustrated. You know, I think she used words like, oh golly gosh, that's frustrating. Oh darn, my phone fell in the water, like that. And so she had to go out and replace it and buy a new phone. But you know what's amazing? What's funny? Because you think you've dropped your phone in the water at Moore Park at night. The waves have come in. The sands have moved. This thing is gone forever. A week later, it turns up in the post. She has a license on the back in a case cover. And this thing has fallen into the sand, been buried by the sand, and some beautiful man walking along with a metal detector finds it. Sees the license, wraps it up, posts it back. She clears out the bit of sand in the charging port, plugs it in, works beautifully, sells it to her sister. What a ripoff. Moving on. Let me give you another one. I was talking to my friend Gail this morning. And Gail says she had her phone stolen from her workplace. And there she was one day, and her phone disappears. And she's thinking, how am I supposed to conduct business without a phone? What am I going to do? She has to go get another phone. But she prays. And she's like, God, I really need that phone back. A couple of months later, she receives a phone call. From a guy who finds the phone in the garden bed at McDonald's. It still has charge in it. He manages to go through the phone and find the name, and then manages to go through the names, because her thing is apparently it's a Facebook silent profile, so you can't contact her. So anyone who wants to contact Gail, you can't. But one of her cousins has the same last name, so he contacts her. And he says, I've found this phone. Do you know whose it might be? So she's telling me this story just this morning. I thought, I'm definitely going to use that in my illustration. Because God is the one who redeems, restores, and returns things that are lost. And I know you're sitting there and you're thinking, how is this going to go to Moses? Because Moses was raised as a prince of Egypt. And Moses is raised as a prince of Egypt. And then we hear and we read on the story, and I hope you're all following through from Exodus as we're reading through. And Moses is raised as a prince of Egypt, raised in the palace under Pharaoh and the princess. And then he reaches an age where he walks out and he sees an Egyptian mistreating an Israelite. And he decides, you know what? That's just wrong. And so he kills the Egyptian. and he hides the body in the sand. He thinks, I got away with that. And the next day he goes out and he sees two Israelites and they're arguing with each other, and he, you know, does that. Brothers, what are you doing? Don't argue. And one of them looks at him and he says, are you going to kill me just like you killed the Egyptian? At that point, he realizes he's in trouble. At that point, he knows other people know, and if other people know, Pharaoh's going to know, and if Pharaoh knows and finds out, I'm definitely a dead man. So he flees to Midian. You're still reading through. I'm not reading the whole thing, otherwise we'd be here all day. So he flees to Midian, and he goes out to Midian, and he finds these shepherd girls looking after their father's flocks, and he helps them, and then he goes back to their house, and the father-in-law takes him, father takes him in, and then he marries Zipporah. Are we still following on with this story? He marries Zipporah, and then he's a shepherd caring for his father's flocks in a backwood place called Midian. I want you to just think about that from a palace, from a place of prominence, from a prince to a pasture, to being a shepherd. I don't know how you would feel, but I would imagine some people wouldn't count that as a promotion. I would imagine some people would feel like they've lost something fairly significant. I would imagine they would start to look at their life and think, man, what is going on that I have lost something so special? I once had a home. In fact, I had a palace. And now I've got a block of ground with a few sheep. They're not even my sheep. They're my father-in-law's sheep. I once was raised as somebody who was significant and special, and now I'm a nobody in Nowheresville. And I wonder what he's lost. You think he might have lost some hope? Bit of joy. And as I was pondering this message and I was thinking, I thought, God, how is this going to intertwine as we come towards Easter, and what is this going to say to the people who I'm talking to today? And I just felt God speak to me and say, there are people here today who have lost things. You might not have lost a phone. Some of you have lost houses. Some of you have lost businesses, partners. Some of you have lost your joy. Some of you have lost hope. Some of you have just lost your peace. And I wanted to stand here this morning and say, God wants to redeem and restore and return those things that were lost. Some of you have lost your identity. You don't even know who you are anymore. You've been so busy trying to fit into this or fit into that you have no idea who you are. I could see how Moses could fit into that category. And then Moses has this burning bush experience. And for those who may not know what the burning bush experience is, I'm going to read it to you. It's found in Exodus chapter 3, verse 1. And it's a Christianized term. It's a term that we use all the time to explain an experience that is so supernatural and so special that you've got no other term to put on it. And it comes from this passage. It says, now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in the flames of fire from the midst of a bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed. You know, it wasn't special that the bush was burning with fire. It was significant that the bush wasn't consumed. And we could stop as we're talking about the life of Moses, and Barry commented very nicely last week that, you know, if Pastor Phil started preaching on that message, he'd make that into a six-week series. We could so easily do a six-week series out of Moses. We could spend an entire sermon just talking about burning bush moments. We could spend an entire sermon talking about how when you're on fire for God and God is flowing through you, you're not burnt up and consumed. But if you run in your own strength, you're burnt up and consumed. We could give that really cool analogy of the lamp and the oil and the wick. And we could say, if you ever light a wick, you know, who's ever seen the oil lamps? And we could say, if you ever light the wick and just leave it dry, it burns out in moments, in minutes, it's gone. But if you dip it in oil and it doesn't burn itself but allows the oil to flow through it, it will last for years. My parents have got oil lamps that are years and years and years old. And I think that's a great analogy for our life, that if we're drawing from his strength, we don't burn out. We just burn brighter. And it wasn't the fact that the bush was on fire. Bushes catch fire. People set fire to things. That's normal. Well, what was amazing was it didn't burn out. And he said, I'm going to turn, I'm going to go, and I'm going to have a look at this bush, and I'm going to find out what's going on. What is it so special and significant about this bush? And we call it the burning bush moment because of this. It says, then Moses in verse 3, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn. So when the Lord saw that he turned aside, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Then he said, do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet. For the place where you stand is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You know, we've just been hearing about those characters in the Old Testament in the book of Genesis. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. We come to Joseph, and now we're into Moses. And he references this, and he says, look, I'm the same God that appeared to those people. I'm the same one who's now appearing to you. And this burning bush experience begins to turn Moses' entire life from being a shepherd to a savior of the people of Israel. And God begins to talk to him in this moment, in this burning bush experience. And I'm believing today that when we have this prayer in a time, that some of you are going to have your burning bush moment, where God is going to speak to you. He's going to put his hand on you and he's going to say, you've been called a shepherd, but I'm going to set you free to become a deliverer of other people. Where he's going to speak to you in such a way and restore and redeem and return things that were once lost. This, for some people here today, is going to be your burning bush moment. And he begins to talk to Moses. He says, I want you to go down. I've heard the cry of my people, the Israelites, and I want you to go down and set them free. And if you've read the story, you know that Moses has a huge list of excuses, a whole reason why he's not the one. Don't choose me. If you've ever been in the place where you feel God's prompting you and you start coming up with excuses, today is your burning bush moment to burn those excuses away. God doesn't want your excuses. He doesn't see what you haven't got. He sees what you can become. And I believe today God wants to reveal to some people it's already in you. It's already in you. You don't got to get God to put something new and fresh in you. You kind of know it's there. And maybe through situations and circumstances you've lost it, but God says to you today, no, I'm going to reveal it to you again. I'm going to bring that which you've buried back to the surface. I'm going to begin to speak to you, not about what was, but about what will be. I'm going to speak to you not about the fact that you're a murderer, not about the fact that you've not been wanted, not about the fact that you've just avoided death, not about any of that. I'm going to speak to you about who you are. And I want to set that platform today and say, I believe that's what God's going to do to some people here this morning. We could talk about Moses' excuses, and we could have an entire sermon on the excuses we come up with. I should finish that sentence. Sometimes my brain comes up with words that don't actually exist, and sometimes it just leaves words out that do exist. See if you can keep up. But I want you to consider Moses for a minute. I want you to consider how his life looks like your life. How sometimes we have situations and circumstances, and we thought everything was going well, and we thought we were a prince, or we thought we had a promise, or we thought we had a purpose, or we thought we were living in a palace. And all of a sudden, it's gone. And we find ourselves in our own wilderness, lost, lonely, without peace, without joy, without purpose, without hope. I want to remind you that God comes in those places and those spaces. He never loses you, by the way. He never wondered where Moses was. He knew where Moses was. And he sets moments up in time when he says, would you turn aside? Would you stop what you're doing and would you turn aside and see what I have for you today? And I want to say that to you this morning. This is one of those spaces that God is going to say, would you stop? I don't want you coming to church week after week going through the motions. I want you to encounter me in a burning bush moment, and I want to redeem, restore, and return things that you've lost. I'm going to ask the music team to come and prepare their hearts and get ready. Because part of today, what I want to do is allow space and time. We're often so in a rush, aren't we, that God tries to talk to us and we're like, okay, God, you got 5 minutes, I'm here, and then I'm going home to get something to eat. But I just feel that today God's saying to you, no, stop. This is a be still moment. This is a turn aside and hear my voice to you moment. This is an opportunity for you to have a burning bush experience. For you to experience me in a new way. Maybe you've been coming here hundreds of times and God says, you know what? You've walked this path 1,000 times. I wonder how often Moses had led the flock on the same hillside, but one day became his burning bush moment. I wonder how often you've come into church week after week, month after month, year after year, but today God says, I want this to be your burning bush moment. Or perhaps this is your first day and you're like, man, I don't even know why I came in. I don't know why I'm here. It doesn't really make sense. I don't understand everything. And I think God says to you, that's okay. You don't have to understand everything. Would you come and connect with me and let me lead you on?
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We hope you enjoyed the service. We are praying for you and we will see you next week.